Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. Purport. The spiritual master is sometimes glorified as Sarva Deva Mayo Guru, Bhagavatam 11.7.27. By the grace of the Guru, the spiritual master, one can understand the different kinds of devatas. The word Deva refers to God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all the demigods, who are also called Devas. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the Lord says, Aham Adirhi Devanam. I am the source of all the devatas. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, the original person, expands in different forms. Tad Aikshata Bahushyam, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. He alone has expanded into many. Advaitam Achutam Anadim Ananta Ruham, Brahma Samhita 5.33. There are different grades of forms known as Swamsa and Vividnamsa. The Swamsa expansions, or Vishnu Tattva, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the Vividnamsa are Jiva Tattva, who are part and parcel of the Lord. Mama Maya, Mama Ivamso, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana. We accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead
and worship Him. All the parts and expansions of the Lord are automatically worshipped. Sarvartaham Achutyeja, Bhagavatam 4.31.14. Krishna is known as Achuta. Senayorupayor madhye ratam stapaya me chuta. By worshipping Achuta,
Krishna, one automatically worships all the demigods. There is no need of separately worshipping either Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva. One concentrates upon Krishna, one worships everyone. Therefore, because Mother Devaki gave birth to Krishna, she is described here as Sarvadevata. So Krishna, He's the source of everything. So then in this everything, then the demigods are part of this. This is one of the points given here, is that Krishna, it is his potencies. So this is one of the aspects of Krishna, that Krishna is the absolute truth, the source of all energies. So that means everything else that we can see in the universe expanded from him is his energies. So it's actually his potency. Therefore the point is made that one simply has to worship the Supreme Lord. One doesn't have to separately worship all the other aspects of the Lord. Because if you worship Krishna, it means you'll worship everything. So we see here, Prabhupada says, though separately worship Krishna or separately worship the jiva. So neither of these is important. What's important is worshiping the Supreme Lord with everything, but understanding it as him, as his part and parcels, as his expansions. This is different, right? Generally think, okay, we don't have to worship everything else. We just worship Krishna. But Krishna means all these things. Right? This is the point. These are some subtle points. They're seemingly minor things. But actually, this makes the complete difference. It's like a minor thing. Is opulence prominent in the consciousness of the devotee, or is it not? Right? That one point means opulence is there. Wherever there's Krishna, there's going to be opulence. Right? Wherever there's the Lord, there will be Lakshmi. So opulence will be there. There's no question of Krishna without opulence. But now, is that an important factor in considering our worship of Krishna or not? Our attraction to Krishna, our attachment to Krishna, the expression of love for Krishna, is that one point important or not? That because he is the Lord of Lakshmi and all opulence is there, and this is his glory, or that he's such a wonderful person, and despite his opulences, he's just the most wonderful person. Right? Very minor point. Right? Just one word, opulence. Is it an inspiration for your service, or is it not an inspiration? That's all. But that makes the difference between Vrindavan and Vaikuntha. So we see when we're working on the spiritual platform, since it is so subtle, the subtleties make all the difference. Therefore sometimes devotees have a difficulty because they want to keep things simple, but only in relationship to spiritual life. Right? How you make your money, your own personal life, it's quite complicated, right? You have all your little gizmos, gadgets, and different clothes for this occasion, that occasion, you know, this little way we do this, that way we do that. So many, it's very complex. If you actually look at it, the amount of rules in your life, self-imposed rules, is very, many times, very sophisticated, very complex. The Krishna consciousness should be just simple. Okay, we get up, we chant a little bit. We take some prasad, everybody does what I tell them to do, and jai, how you go? Anything more? You know, why we should be complicated, you know? It should be simple. But because of this, then we miss the point between the spiritual realm. Where we're going, okay, we say we're servants of Radha Krishna. Now, if we're servants of Radha, but what makes us servants of Radha Krishna? Just because we worship Radha and Krishna, that makes us servants of Radha Krishna. Which Radha Krishna? Which Radha Krishna do you want to know? Right? You go to South India. I've been, you know, gone there, darshan, Udupi Krishna, the Madhva main seat of there. And while looking into the windows, you know, there's little squares, there's nine little holes, this big, that you can take darshan the deep. Because the holes are in the back, like that. Originally there was a door in the front. And everyone used to have darshan there. And then one day, one devotee who couldn't come into the temple, he was singing behind the deity. And so the deity turned around, and a hole opened in the back wall, so he could have darshan. And then everybody else got to see his back. So then they closed the front door, and now you only get darshan from those blue windows. Is that the deity, that devotee, you know, sits on that side, this deity is there. So that way he always gets darshan. So I was there, and one lady came up, Madhva, you know, she's fully fixed on going back to Vaikuntha and having four arms, and she's sitting there singing wonderful prayers about Krishna and the gopis. Like that. In fact, while I was looking through the little window, I was quite surprised, because I was expecting to see, you know, Vishnu standing there, and instead I saw one gopi sitting on a swing, like that. Because that day they had dressed him up as one of the gopis, and he was sitting on a swing. You know, so I was quite surprised. You know. But she was singing all these wonderful prayers. The Shris, one of their main acharyas, Andal, all she does, her every last verse of all of her songs is only about Krishna and Vrindavan. And these are Vaikuntha Vasis. So they also appreciate and worship Radha and Krishna. They have no problem. But because opulence is their main inspiration, then they are going to Vaikuntha. Right? So therefore, there are some subtleties. There are some subtle points that should be seen. We're subtle in our own life. Right? How many times we hear, they don't understand me. You know, why don't they take the time? Why don't they inquire? Why don't they get to know me? Is that gross or subtle? Right? You see the outside, it's easy enough to see. You make your opinion. But then there's some subtleties that they're missing. So why for us, it's all subtle, touchy-feely, you know, this, that, all these kind of stuff. But for God, it's just, you know, straightforward across the board, that's it, you know, bus. So this is a problem. So when we engage our subtleties in Krishna's service, then we'll find some actual satisfaction in the subtleties. Otherwise, they'll just remain as mundane subtleties. Our own personal, mundane subtleties. So, So here, this is a major subtle point, right? When Prabhupada is saying, you don't have to separately, you don't worship the demigods in that, you only have to worship Krishna. But he makes it clear here that it's not Krishna alone. You worship the living entities or the demigods alone, that's not complete. You worship Krishna alone, that's also not complete. So Krishna means with everyone and seeing everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. That's Krishna. There is no such thing as Krishna alone, you know, sitting in an om sai, floating in a cloud. A popular poster painting, of course. But it doesn't exist. There is no such thing. You know, it's like saying the sun without the sun rays, without light. Yeah, the sun came up today, but it stayed dark, you know, because what to do? It came without the sun rays. Everybody has, you know, can do whatever they like. So he wasn't going without the sun rays. Why is he complaining? No, there's no question. It comes together. So, the sun coming up, us seeing, you know, the plants being nourished, things being dried up, things being purified, you know, it getting hot, the wind blowing, it all goes together. You say the sun, it means all of that. You can't get the sun separately, so you can't get Krishna separately from the living entities, or from his internal potency. Right? Or the material energy. It all comes together. It's a package deal. So, understanding Krishna means understanding everything in relationship to Krishna. Grossest concept, the materialist sees themselves. Right? Or, if they're a little more subtle, they see the demigods. Then, when they actually take up devotional service, then they see only Krishna. And then as they mature in devotional service, then they see Krishna with his devotees, his paraphernalia, his dham, his lila. Like that. This is the process. If we only see Krishna as only Krishna, then it means his devotees, but still we need to go farther. It's not far enough. Right? It means we want Krishna, then the distance we have to go is all the way to Krishna. Right? Not just part of that. Part of that's not enough. Right? Of course, anything done has value because it's connected to Krishna. That's why it has value. You may say, oh, but we're just a little bit, Krishna will accept it. Why? Because it's connected to Him. So the same principle. Then we take that further, where everything in our life is connected to Krishna. Then it's good. Then we get something. So here then we see, therefore the devotees don't have any problem with the demigods. Because they embody certain potencies of Krishna. But they don't worship them separately than Krishna. Right? This is also a problem. Neophyte will have this difficulty. Okay, it's Krishna, it's his potency, so what do we care for the demigods? Right? So this is one side. The other is that, oh, if they're the potency of Krishna, then if we worship them then and get whatever we want from them materially, then that's Krishna. No, it's his potency. It's like we take something from a rich man. And it's his. Yes, it is his. I've taken his money and I'm keeping it in my house. But we're using it for ourselves. So the thief completely forgets. Right? And, you know, another person who feels he's just kind of, you know, borrowing it or something, but it's still the same thing. He's using it for himself. The real thing is there, so leaves it, it's there for his service. It's the same way the demigods, then they are there, they're servants of Krishna, so we respect them as servants of Krishna, but we don't have to approach them separately to get something material. You know, because their potency is coming from Krishna, so therefore we would deal with Krishna. We may see it coming through them. Right? Just like you approach the big man and you get what you want done through a secretary. But it works because the secretary is his secretary. And you understand the secretary giving you the things, it's actually coming from the boss. So these subtleties are important. If one can do this, then one frees oneself from so much lust, envy, jealousy, diplomacy, politics, you know, all kinds of other anxieties, because the subtleness is there. That's the mind, that's the intelligence, that's the ego. We have it. And we can't ignore it. So either we'll use it for our own purposes and drive ourselves nuts, or we can start to slowly understand it's there and use it for Krishna. Understanding the subtleties of Krishna in our life, and everything we do, right? You go and you turn on the switch, okay? Then why turn on the switch? Right? Whose switch is it? Is it your switch? Right? You know, okay, you paid money. I paid money. Okay, but whose money is it? Lakshmi is ours? Since when is she ours? No, but I went out and worked for it. Okay, who gave you that ability? Right? Krishna. Right? And what did they use? Your body, your mind. What is it made out of? Material elements. Whose are they? Ours? No, Krishna's. The situations, they're all Krishna's. Material energies, Krishna's. Yoga Mayas and Maha Mayas arrangements are all Krishna. So, how is it our switch? Right? How is it our work? Right? We're turning on the switch for ourselves or for? Right? Why should we be turning on the switch for ourselves? Shouldn't that turning on the switch be connected to Krishna? Right? We're turning on the switch and some activity happens, the light goes on, the machine works. You know, something happens. But should that happening be for us, or should Krishna be involved? So this is the level that we have to take things. Right? The gopis even took it to the blinking of an eyelid, that they got in the way of their service, so there was no importance of them. Right? They were ready to renounce the blinking of their eyelids because it didn't assist their service. Right? Demigods don't blink, so they thought that was great. But human beings, then they have this flaw, you know, blinking eyelids, so they can't just absorb themselves so nicely. So like this is what's mean. And this is what it means, that we're completely absorbed, everything's for Krishna. Just whatever we do is for Krishna. And it's possible to be on that level of consciousness. But we have to desire that. So, therefore, the rules and regulations are there to establish or to keep the neophytes from going off into so many directions. Therefore, you see, the Shris, there's no question, they go near a demigod temple, offer any respect to a demigod, nothing. They don't even factor them in, right? They do their puja, and the puja starts with worship of Vishvakshana. Ganesh is not involved. There's not one demigod in even the slightest, whatever it is, particle that is there in any of their worship or consideration. Nothing. Zero. Right? But in the mudras, they're also like with the body, same destination, same everything. They all worship the demigods, but as the potencies of the Lord. So both are proper. Because the demigod has no meaning without Krishna, therefore if you worship Krishna, you don't need to worship them. Well, which is true. They won't care. They won't mind. They're not thinking, who are these Shris? And the same madness, that if they're respected in connection with Krishna, then it also reminds them of their position. They're happy. So there is something to stop. That there will be any misuse. So therefore these rules to create, we don't misuse anything. Okay. So then the Lord has expanded into all these forms, but do we see Him in those forms? I mean, that's the point. That is the point. In the beginning we know that this is Prasad is Krishna. But do we perceive Krishna, or do we perceive, the spicing, the this, the that? So in the beginning, we tend to that, appreciate that. We like it, and we actually are liking Krishna. But then we can go farther. That is Krishna. That's what's so wonderful. It tastes nice, not because of this spice, that spice. It tastes nice because it's Krishna. So that kind of subtlety is there. So it's a whole other world. We live with that world at every moment. It's just a matter if we want to recognize it and use it for Krishna. We can't say, we don't get it. What is this new concept, right? We are thinking that, right? And thinking is what? Gross or subtle? Right? You're walking down the street, you're sitting in your room, you're taking a bath. Which world are you living in? The gross of the subtle. Right? We're always in the subtle. Now and again we forget about it and get absorbed in the gross. We're always in the subtle. Now whether we recognize that it exists or not, then that's another thing. But the subtle is where we're situated. That's how we know the gross. Right? Through desire, then we see. And through these eyes, we know the gross world. You're only knowing the gross world through these eyes, or through the ears, or through the nose, or through the touch. We cannot know this world through something else. We can know through scripture, through hearing. But we're from our platform, the subtle platform, the soul, floating in the life airs, surrounded by the mind, intelligence, and false ego, has then expanded a certain gross body so that they can perceive the world how the subtle body wants to perceive it. I want to perceive myself as big and strong, and therefore then I have a big strong body. Or I perceive myself as someone who can see nicely or has a very discriminating, you know, sense of sight or smell or touch, so I have that. Or I don't worry about that, I don't have that. Or based on karma, we may have it or not. But the gross body is what we're perceiving the world through. So we actually only live in our subtle body. We only live in the subtle world. Though we project our consciousness onto the gross, subtlety is where we live. So now it's a matter of understanding, do we want to engage that aspect of our life in Krishna's service, or is that for us? Okay, I get the body up in the morning, I drag it to the temple, and I stand there in front of the deities, and I, you know, handle some beads, and I walk around, and, you know, do this and that. But what about what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm willing? You know, what I'm doing, okay, the body, okay, but what about the mind? What about the words? Is that for Krishna or that's not for Krishna? So, that's the... So we see here these subtleties that are there, that Devaki is known as this... Sarva Devata, because she is the source of all demigods. I mean, she is giving birth to Krishna, so then Krishna is the source of all the demigods. Therefore, everything is there, is all based on Krishna. So by pastime, then she is Sarva Devata. Or here, the spiritual master is also known as Sarva Devamaya Guru. Is that he is the guru, the manifestation of all the demigods, because he gives you Krishna. Therefore, all the demigods and whatever comes from that is also included in that. Right? If you give someone Krishna, then it's there. Let's say, you know, we have cents, or here we have paisa, and we have rupees. So if someone gives you rupees, it includes paisa. So if you say, here comes the paisa wala, right? But he's giving you rupees. You can say, no, why you should call him the rupee wala? No, he's called the paisa wala, not the rupee. Right? He gives you rupees, but it includes paisa. Right? So the guru is giving you Krishna, but then he's said to be like the manifestation of all the demigods, because that all comes along with it. You have Krishna, you already have demigods, you have everything else. So these subtleties are there. Any questions on this? Comments? Looking to you first this time. Yes, no? Yes?
Aren't you mentioning that one can live this life where you see everything connected to Krishna and like every moment through the consciousness? In other words, dependent on desire, if we desire to have some sense of life. So it would seem that
the desire. That's a good one. You can hear? In the back? No. The question was, or point was actually, is that the subtlety, or is it, to be able to engage the subtle aspects in Krishna's service depends upon desire. So then, how to purify the desire so that we practically can do it? You know, it means that. The theory is the first step that we understand, but then the next step is how to apply that. We hear the theory, sounds good, okay, and then we want to do it. So then we've gone from thinking to feeling, but then from feeling, then naturally we must actually apply it, that's the will. So then that completes the circuit. That if we understand that we desire it, then we will try to find out about it. That's one thing, we should know. And so it's consciousness. Consciousness means that we become aware. We're conscious of something, we're aware unconsciously, so we're not aware. So then slowly, gradually, we become aware of what's around us. But that's still secondary. The main thing is purification comes from these main aspects of hearing, chanting, associating with the devotees, worshipping the deity, living in the Dhamma. These five main aspects are our main source of purity. Because those purify in great, effectiveness, very powerful. Secondary to that, because we have a tendency, it means all we have to do is do those five, or even if we just hear, chant, and a good association, that's enough. But because then we will be worshiping the Lord in the form of His holy name, you know, in the form of His name, form, qualities, pastimes, like that. If not, then the deity reminds us that it has to be done. You know, we go on doing this and that, but Mangalarti is there. We have to get up, and that should be the first thing we want to do in the morning. Why introduce this? Why is Krishna so, he gets everybody out of the bed, such a nice time to sleep, and everything like that. You know, demands we get up and take a bath, come here, all these things. Because that's what the residents of the spiritual realm do. When they wake up in the morning, the first thing they want to do is see Krishna. Right? So then this is the earliest they can see Krishna. Before that, he's asleep. Right? So we get up before he gets up so that we can be ready. So when he wakes up, then we're there to see him. So the first possible moment that we can see him, we're there. And then the last possible moment we can see him, then that's also there. We see the birds and animals in Vrindavan. They follow Krishna right up to the gates of Vrindavan. And then they just stay there. All those trees and everything, that's where they sleep tonight. They don't sleep out in the forest. They sleep in that first line of trees. And that is right around where they, at the gate, where they can see Krishna. So then that's the last they can see him, because he's going in at twilight. And as soon as it gets dark, then they go to sleep. So they go to sleep there. Right? And then in the morning, then the first rays of light, and Krishna comes out, goes to the field, milks the cows, the woman, then they're there to see him. So then what we're being given is an opportunity to live the lifestyle that the residents of the spiritual realm live. Right? But because for us, it's not a regular thing, then it has to be made into rules. Then we understand rules. Why do we understand rules? Because of profit and loss. Right? Profit and loss is an important thing. We only do something because we're going to get some benefit. If we don't get a benefit, we're not going to do it. Even if it's spiritual. Right? You chant Hare Krishna, you go back to Godhead. I want to go back to Godhead, so I'm chanting. Right? We want to please Krishna. We have a desire to please Krishna. Therefore, we're doing it. So without desire, there is no activity. So, because of our this being predominant, our main thing is profit and loss. Therefore, the rules and regulations present profit and loss. You do this, it's great for you. You don't do this, it's not great for you. And you create habit by habit. You create a good habit by regularity. You create a bad habit by regularity. So if we habitually do things, activities in the spiritual world, we become habituated. Therefore, the following of the rules and regulations, then comes into being. That's the Pancharatra. So that we've explained the first level, the Bhagavat, doing that hearing, chanting, and remembering. Now that's the Pancharatra. Now, that basically is a complete lifestyle for us. We can hear, chant, worship the deity, do services for the deity, preach, and that can keep us busy all day. It does? Good. If it doesn't, then the Vedic literature has different ways to keep us busy. It means those moments that we're not doing these other two aspects, then what we're doing? We're home, we're making money, we're taking care of the family, we're doing something that is seen as important in our life because of our own personal, emotional, and physical, and sensual and whatever needs, then the Vedic literature gives direction on it. And if we see those in connection to Krishna, then we're fully engaged. So whatever level we come down to, if we're able to engage all those things in Krishna's service, that will bring us to the next level, and that will bring us up to the top level. And that level, the Bhagavad platform, that will bring us to prema. So by following the scriptural rules and regulations under the authority of Guru and the sadhus, and finding that situation which best applies to us, and we're able to be fully engaged, that's the process of purification, of upliftment. And then the more we progress, the more we have the desire to progress. That's the wonderful thing about it. You know, the material works kind of on that principle, because it's a reflection. So we do something, we like it, we want to do it again. So then we do it again, we want to do it even more. And then again, we, like this, it increases. But the problem with the material energy is it itself gets boring. So we get jaded with the material. So then that thing that enthused us today, then after some time it's not very enthusing, till then we don't want to do that particular thing. Right? But then we'll get an idea, become attracted to something else because we must do something. So then we'll do that. But then the same problem will come. It's temporary. It won't give us the satisfaction. Well, the spiritual, if we do it, then we have the desire to do it again. The spiritual doesn't have that problem. Being eternal, then the happiness is always increasing, developing. So then we can eternally be enthused about it and inspired about it, being inspired from the last time we did it to do it again. So it's eternal. So we just have to start the process. You know, it's just like get some momentum going. You just start it and then it will keep going. You know, it's like these, what do you call it? Perpetual motion, yeah. Once you start it, that's the only problem with the perpetual motion machineries of this world is you have to start it. You have to build it and then you have to give it its first push. You know? But the spiritual world, it's already there and already happening. It's just a matter, we just have to recognize and take part. Different. Here you have to push it, there you get sucked in. Does that make some sense? Okay. But all this, the more it's conscious, the better the effect. The more you're conscious that there is a process and I have to take that part, then the more effect is there. But if we're not conscious, then the holy name is going to have effect. But it may be slower, especially if we're distracted by material desires and of material desires, if we're jealous or envious of Vaishnavas, like that, of the scriptures, of the Lord, then there'll be a problem. That will seriously slow down the spiritual life. But if that's not there, then even we're not so conscious, it will go on, and eventually we will become conscious. Then from that conscious, that will increase until we come to fully being conscious, which means Krishna consciousness. But if we're aware of that it's there, and that's going to happen automatically, then we might be able to speed up the process. Like that. And like in school, the teacher teaches something over and over and over again. Because there's a principle they're trying to get you to understand. Right? But to learn one simple principle may take years of various details and various practices and different angles and all that. But actually what they're trying to teach is something very simple. Right? There's a principle there. And if that's understood, then you've learned the subject. So now if the teacher is aware of that, we're aware of, made aware of that, then very quickly we can catch that point. But if the teacher's not aware, we're not aware, then we can go a long time before we find it out. And then when we find it out, when we write a book, make $1 million, because it's something new. It's always been there. Right? It's always been there. Okay. So it's just a matter of, if we know it's there, it will help things. And if we don't know it's there, then eventually we will. And whether we want to do it this lifetime or next lifetime, the life after that, or whenever we get around to it. for the faith.
Give
an example of a principle in teaching. When it comes to mind, who's like, let's say someone is apprenticing under someone as, how do you say, in business. So the principle is you have to find the market and you have to get something at a rate less than what you sell it. Right? If you have something people want and you can sell it to them at more than what you bought it for, you're doing business. Right? But now along with that there's so many details. Advertising, what? It's just to create the market, create the need. Right? Then your transportation, where you buy it from this person or from a broker, you go to the original source, or you manufacture it yourself, or you have sister companies that they manufacture and sell to each other and keep it all. These are all details. You don't know this one principle of if somebody needs something, they'll make the endeavor to get it. And if you have what they want, make it available, and you sell it to them more than what you bought it for, then you may profit. If you understand that, then the rest of it you'll be able to work out. If you don't understand that, you can learn business for, you know, from now until the cows come home. And you'll never be a businessman. So that's all it is. It's, you know, engineering, right? It's just where the flow of energy moves. You have something and you need to push from the top or from the side or from any angle. Where that energy will go, that's engineering. That's all it is. It's not something else. Right? Does that make sense? For psychology, you have the mind. It's going to accept something and reject something. Right? And it's going to take advantage of the intelligence. Then it'll make those decisions based on ego, right? And other desires through what facilities it has in the way of senses. So all it is what is how the mind accepts and rejects. And how to get it to accept something that's good and to reject something that's bad. That's it. You understand that principle, you can work with the mind, you can work with the intelligence, the ego, the senses. But that takes a long time to understand how that applies. So every subject matter is that simple. Right? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or is serving. Right? Then the ultimate need of the living entity as that part and parcel of Krishna and servant of Krishna is to develop love for Krishna, or express that love for Krishna, have that love for Krishna. And that love is expressed through service. That's it. That is our philosophy. As far as principle goes, there's nothing else. Everything else is an expansion of that. So every principle has basically unlimited detail. But if you have the detail and don't have that principle, you don't know the subject. So that's the difference between a master and an expert. The expert knows the details like anything and comfortably can work with them, but he doesn't know the principle. A master is one who knows that principle. He may not be seen as so expert. He may not know unlimited details like the expert. But he can even teach the expert because the expert doesn't know actually what he's working with. Right? That's why the expert cannot deal with kids or the lay person. Because they won't understand his high level of, you know, technicality. But a master can. A master can take his subject and teach it to a child. Because the principle can be grasped by anybody. So the Vedic concept is, first you teach the principle. And if you can't, If it doesn't go through, then you keep teaching the principle. You keep saying the principle, but you start adding details to it to give example. And then you look at it from different angles. That's called vichara. Different angles means different details that go to the same principle. Does that make sense? Which?
The angles
is called vichara. No, with a V. Vichara. Right? Achara is behavior. Vichara is seeing things according to different angles. Prachara is talking about the thing, giving it to others. Right? That achara is being kind to the others. They're all connected, all of them. Upachara means to worship that person with paraphernalia. So all there is Krishna, right? Vichara is about Krishna, how to see Krishna from different angles. Upachara is how to worship him. Prachara is how to preach about him, to others about him. Achara is the behavior of someone who serves Krishna or who is a worshiper of Krishna. Right? So Krishna is the subject. There isn't another subject. Then from him expand all these different other substances. So he's the vastu, he's the substance. And then from him, then are there so many aspects of substance, because it's connected to him, and it has a substance. Understand? And, so this is how you know, just learning works, how education works, is understanding what is the substance. You don't understand the substance, you haven't understood the subject. So if you understand the substance, then you understand how it applies, what its goal, what it is connected to you, everything else, what its goal is, how to affect it to get the goal. When you get the goal, what you do must get the goal. If it doesn't get the goal, it's not useful. Right? We decide we want to boil a pot of water. So we get a shoe, fill it up with water, and throw it out the window. Then, okay, we got a container. You know, we had water, we connected the container in the water, and we put that container in the water in some place. Right? But it was the wrong container in the wrong place. Right? It means you have to connect the container with the water in it to fire, not to the window. Right? Plus, we have to have a container, since so if it's throwing out the window, the shoe's fine. But if you want to put it on the fire, the shoe is not fine. It has to be a pot that doesn't burn. Right? If we put the fire in the pot, then we also have a problem. Right? The espresso machine, okay, that's no problem. But otherwise, it goes under the pot, you know, or around the pot. So we have to know that how to apply that fire to the container to create heat in the water. Right? Then you have so many ways it can be done. So that's understanding.
Rick brings to mind what the Prabhupada says that the scientists are unable to explain nature of the atom, the layman, because they don't understand the jargon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because you heard here. Says that Prabhupada says that the scientists can't explain the atom to the layman because the layman doesn't understand the jargon. And the scientist is very attached to his jargon because that is his identity. Yeah.
What is jargon?
Oh, what is jargon? Okay, nice. Jargon. Jargon means the specific vocabulary, you know, that expresses that particular object. It's like
jargon.
It means every subject has its jargon, right?
Jargon.
Huh?
Is jargon a kind of jargon?
Is jargon a jargon? Yes, jargon is also a jargon. Yes. My last is bringing up some very subtle points. Yeah. So that's the layman's jargon is jargon. Well, how do you say it? Someone else they call it vocabulary. You know, and if I say someone else called it newspeak. Right? difference. So it's, that's the thing is you, that the paraphernalia, the externals, become your identity. The scientist, he has his language, you know, he has his misfitting, you know, tie and suit and everything like this. You know, all these things he has to have, otherwise he's not a scientist. So if you take him out of that environment, they'll be uncomfortable. You know, so just like a kid on the street, he has his dress, he has his language, and he's comfortable in that. And you take that away, and then there's, what's their identity? So the devotee doesn't have these problems because he's serving the Krishna, so these things aren't his identity. He dresses in a certain way according to tradition because this is how Krishna likes it. But it's not him. I'm not this kurta or this beak bag or a shaved head or, you know, a tilak. I'm not those things. But Krishna likes it like this. And since I have to serve Krishna and have a form, therefore I use it like that. But for the others, it is their identity. And that's all they have. Therefore, they don't really give up that identity. The master, he is the teacher, so therefore he doesn't lose his identity by giving up his language to express it in another way. But for the expert, his language is his identity. Like that. Should probably end here, getting late. It's the water sea and the time is getting pretty. Those who felt it was more important, you know, have already gone, so we're trying to restrict them. Grantarashi my Bhagavati, Sri Bhagavati, some of the Papa Kudindiki, and I go through things.
Described in Brahma as an amorous affair.
Yeah. So he's getting, it's just like in the material energy. Then he's expanded his energy, he's transformed as the external and internal energy, and they're playing with each other. There's Purusha and Prakriti, and so that's Shiva and Parvati. So everything that goes on is them. So they're getting what they're getting out of it, you know, in their expanded forms, you know. And, you know, modern is generally more along the lines of all kinds of the wild expansions of expansions. Like, you know, most nowadays is you're dealing outside even the ten, you know, the Dasa Mahavidyas of expansions of Durga. She has 10 forms. So mostly what you see in this world going on is their expansions or their sub-expansions. You know, like that, you know, because then it gets kind of real wild. And then Shiva's, you know, those expansions of Shiva, that those match. So then they're interacting with each other. But because we think we are that and we're the doer, we enjoy and suffer and we get the reactions for that. Well, it's just their energies interacting. So for them, it's just, there's no problem. But at the same time, if it was up to them, then they'd rather interact on this higher level. Like that. You want to deal with them personally, then that's there. But otherwise, them and themselves, their energies are all interacting with each other. So, you know, the spiritual forms and then the material forms. So it's, you know, but it's a subtle point, because when you get into this kind of subtlety, it can get the danger is that because the mind catches on part of it, well then there's nothing wrong in enjoying because it's Krishna, but then who are we to enjoy Krishna? And if it is Krishna, then Krishna has to be enjoyed the way he wants to be enjoyed, right? Like we say, Krishna, the potency of womanhood is Krishna, therefore we can then interacting with women is interacting with Krishna. But Krishna as that woman, how does he want to be dealt with? You want to deal how you want, you deal the way he doesn't like, that's called sin. You deal the way he likes to be dealt with in that potency, that's called pious. But if you really want to know, then there's spiritual. And so then, you know, the spiritual is, we're not the Purusha, we're the Prakriti. So therefore, then it changes. We're the female, he's the male. Therefore, then it takes on a whole different thing. Therefore, you know, he's the enjoyer of this woman, not me. right? And then how one deals with, then that has to be in such a way that that is pleasing to Krishna. So then that takes it even farther. But the lowest that you can come is just the pious and impious interaction, because it's God's law and God's energy. So the deal outside of that is sin. If you really want to please Krishna, then that piety has to be connected to Krishna. Its purpose must be for Krishna.
On that point about that in the material world, one just comes down to Shiva, nobody is. What do you mean when Krishna says,
yeah, no, he's the enjoyer, because whatever is done actually for him. Because it's his, Shiva and Parvati are his, it is his expansion and potencies. But ultimately, that's just the interaction of the material elements. But the endeavor of the living entity to like elevate himself in that, then that interaction, sacrifice means Vishnu. Doesn't mean Shiva, doesn't mean Parvati. It just means, you know, we touch something. That's Shiva and Parvati touching. You know, we notice something, we perceive something as pleasure, as pain. That's there. But using that for higher purpose, that is then, because Krishna is Yajna. That's for him. So then all sacrifice is meant to please him, you know. All the following the rules and regulations of the Vedic literatures is to please him. You know, I think there's a verse in the Bhagavatam like that, isn't it? You know, all sacrifices for him, all austerity, all knowledge is to know him, all austerity is like this, it just goes through. And then I think there's another one where it just says he is that. You know, Narayan is this, Narayan is that, Narayan. Bhaktir Narayana. Yeah, that's it.
Vasudeva.
Like this. He is these things. And at the same time, those things are to know him. So all this is just to convince us that we're actually just servants of Krishna, and that we should just take up his service and the association of devotees in a favorable way. Like that, you know. So therefore, then there's so much intellectualizing, so much sentiment, so much engaging the senses, so much engaging the ego, because we have an ego. Okay, so bring our ego in line with Krishna. Rather, I'm the enjoyer and controller. Okay, I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grihastha, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm in charge, I'm following all these things. Then, you know, I'm a man serving Krishna, I'm a woman serving Krishna, I'm the boss serving Krishna, I'm engaging others in Krishna's service, or I'm following others who are engaging me in Krishna's service. So you engage the identity. And then eventually it comes to, you know, more I'm servant is more prominent than the external form. You know, so it's not like it's the Uttama then doesn't have to follow it, like the Paramahamsa doesn't have to follow, because he's come to the pure, real platform of identity, the real application of his intelligence, real application of his mind, real application of the body. So there's no more need of rules from this plane. So once he comes to that, you don't have to follow any rule here. Though so much will be followed, because all the rules here are basically, they're expansions of the original spontaneous transcendental nature of the residence of the spiritual world. Means Vaikuntha, the Braj mood then becomes formalized in Dwarka, and that expands into Vaikuntha, that expands into the material world. So it's ultimately for that.
This, when we start, we make a sacrifice for appeasing Krishna, for engaging Krishna's service. That's not destiny or fate or karma.
No.
That's free will.
That's free will. It may be, means there's a few things, is that if it's in devotional service, it has absolutely nothing to do with destiny. It's completely free will. Because we could take those things and use them for pious or impious activities. But if we're doing it for Krishna, that's our free will to use it for Krishna. And that's basically...
Would that be called a free will if you did it for pious or impious?
It is, because there's a free will, but it will be flavored. It means you've done pious activities, therefore you'll be given the opportunity to perform pious activities. That's predestined. Then when the opportunity comes to perform a pious activity from your past free will that's created the destiny of this moment, then most likely because of that, the desire in the heart to perform pious activity will be there. So you're not actually free, but at the same time you are, because you still have made that decision. So it's seen in that light. Though most likely the pious person will do a pious activity, an impious person will do an impious activity. But at one point, because the cycle of samsara, the pious person has to take two sinful, and the sinful has to take the pious. So that they can just see that there's a tendency there. You know, therefore you have your astrology and all these things, because they can see the tendencies. They can't say exactly what they're doing. That's only false ego if they say that, no, we can tell exactly. No, they can't. Their science ends at the viraja. And if they want to say it's more than that, then they don't know their science, because they don't know how to bridge the science to Krishna. So therefore, any real astrologer will tell you that we can tell the tendency. And generally, on the material platform, that tendency always happens that way. You know, if you take a hungry dog into a room with something to eat, you can guarantee, you know, pretty much within your mind, 101%, he's going to run over there and eat it. But for some reason, he might not. You didn't take into consideration he's sick, or that particular thing that was there he doesn't like for some reason. Last time he ate that, you know, somebody beat him, so therefore he's afraid of that, you know, or something, you know. But pretty much you can say is, this is what's going to happen. But if they're going to say 100%, then they have to say they know the science so well, down to the finest little detail, which they can't go. They can't go more than five levels into the science. You know, you have the movement of the planets. It takes 120 years. So then one planet is in there for, let's say, a certain amount of years. You can take that and divide that by 9. Then you can take one of those, divide that by 9. And then you take one of those, divide that by 9. And take one of those, divide that by 9. So that's as subtle as the science goes. Past that is too subtle. You know, the humans can't work with it. But it goes more. You can take it down to the split second, which planet is there, so what's going on. So they don't know that. So then when they say it's here, but it could be for that split second another planet was there, therefore they hesitated because the other planet was there. And then when it moves around to this planet, next second then they say yes. They can't. So, you know, there's always a limit.
They use different tools. There are different tools. So if one tool is pointing to something, then they use completely other tool. So if it's, if more, yeah, it's probability.
Yeah. I mean, it's a science, and the science given by Krishna, but the point is who gave the science? Krishna. Who made the stars? Who gave them their potencies? Who gave them their authority? That's Krishna. So therefore, if you can't see Krishna in the science, it's not very well educated.
And then ultimately, it's Krishna within the heart that is going to tell him correctly.
So Krishna is always the factor you can't tell. Krishna, he wants to do this now or later. The modes of nature will do it like this. But Krishna might adjust it. He might adjust the amount. How many devotees have been told by their astrologer they're going to get deathly ill, this, that, and they don't get anything? You know? Constant. Oh, I didn't see this one point here. Yeah, okay, so then that means then, you know, then you can't say everything. Your science may, if you have faith in the science, can say yes. Why? Because the science is based on Krishna. So therefore, the free will is always there, though basically you can tell which direction they're going to go. But if it's devotional service, you can't tell.
Why would you want to choose otherwise? If it's your destiny, you have a free will, why would you want to choose? Everything is indicating it's your, we'll flavor it up for you, it's what you want.
Because there's so many things that are there, because it's when something fructifies, you can't say. I do one activity, I plant an eggplant, and in 2 months I have a fruit. I plant a mango tree, I don't have one for 5-6 years. So therefore, there is something deeper down that was there that's fructifying now that the one didn't see. You know? So therefore, it's let's say you've been doing so much pious activity and that bears fruit now. But there's something else that I did that was very sinful that also still has influence after, let's say, 100 lifetimes. And so that element is there. Though for 99 lifetimes, I haven't done that. So people can't see that in the previous lifetime's chart. Previous life, very pious, this, that. You know, a little minor mistake, but, you know, nothing major. But that mistake may come here. Because it was so minor then, you would figure it won't have an influence now. But it's there because of a major mistake before. Some things you just do now, you get an immediate reaction. Some things they influence for hundreds of lifetimes. You know? Like that. So that's, these things are, you know, so it's very complex.
That's why Krishna says that we should not see the body in a bad light. If something happens, he's doing very well in devotional service, and then something happens.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you shouldn't see.
Security, how you say, the verse is there for our benefit and for our security, so we don't criticize someone who is 99% pure.
Yeah.
Something happens because of, as you said, 100 lives before, something happened.
Yeah, we don't know. All these things, they have influence and all that. So it's, they have effect. You know, so it creates the situation, but because it's so many things, and a situation is dependent upon many things, so then which one will have the most influence at the time is also hard to say. You know?
She says he... about the yogi, he picks up in his next life, he's accustomed to practicing yoga. So even that austerity and sacrifice, that is influence.
Yeah, you'll see. I mean, that's why you see in a little child, you know, one child is naturally inclined towards austerity and other things. Another kid, absolutely nothing. They can't tolerate any inconvenience. So this is all from previous life. Like that. What they do with that, you know, so therefore then the person who has so much inconvenience, he decides, no, I have to become more strict. He may become more austere than the other person who's naturally austere, takes it for granted, and so therefore doesn't really develop it. He's naturally austere, but, you know, it'll tend towards not being austere. Unless he takes it again as an important, as a value. Then he can take it further, because he started here, he can take it here, while the other person is starting down here, but... It's like the rabbit and the hare. You know, the rabbit could have easily won the race, but he decided to stop, take a nap, this, that, and the tortoise just plodded along, and he won. So it's the same thing. You see that, the story also, Prema Pradeep, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that novel. Then two persons come, you know, like that, with Agyata Sukriti. They're interested in devotional service, want to know what is all this stuff going on in Vrindavan. They go from Calcutta there, visit. One is kind of more interested in yoga, and therefore a little bit more inclined towards, you know, these subtleties of the Vaishnava culture and behavior. And the other one's just, you know, just a gentleman who never really even thought about or got into these, but he's become intrigued. So the two of them go, so right in the beginning, the one that's more inclined towards yoga kind of gets into it more, starts wearing tilak and neck beads, you know, immediately. The other person's, you know, not sure because he wants to check, commit him, you know, before he commits himself. The other one that commits himself very easily and like that. As the story unfolds, the second gentleman, he actually becomes the advanced devotee. And the first one, he gets sidetracked into yoga. So he learns from the same Babaji yoga, while the other one learns from him devotion. Because that Babaji that they went to, he was a yogi before becoming a devotee, so he was expert in this Sangha yoga system, you know, and could explain the whole thing like that. So the first man became more attracted by that with some devotion, and the other one just became exclusively interested in devotion. So at the end, so these kind of things, what speed someone will move, it's hard to say. So free will is there at every moment, but the situations that you're in are predestined by your previous free will. You know, like that.
Is free will more or less the same as karma, isn't it?
Free will is what creates your karma.
And then that karma creates the next free will.
It creates the situation in which you can exercise your free will. Like that. No, generally when you have a situation, you can kind of tell. Like someone's worked on a project put in so much time, energy, money, and all that thought, you can pretty much say they'll be attached to it. So then if you try to change them from that, it'll be hard. Like that. But if the attachment's not, it can change easily. Easy, is that, that's the, it doesn't have to be like this. So that's their free will. You know? Somebody's done so much in the temple and worked for it, the project. He becomes attached. It's his temple. You know, his facilities, his this, that. And then you can't adjust them from there. But that's his free will to become attached. He doesn't have to. You know? Because he maintains that identity is of I am the doer. So if I'm the doer, then the results are mine. Well, another person, if they understand, is Krishna's service, then when they have another service for him, like when Prabhupada was here, devotees would change direction in service amazingly. They'd be going along the one way and Prabhupada would say, okay, go over here. You know, they developed the zone, they were the temple president or whatever it is, and then, or GBC, and then Prabhupada would say, hey, go open something over here. They wouldn't say, you know, they wouldn't try to take it off. They'd just go. So the detachment was much more because it was being done for Krishna. Now more attachment is there. So therefore, you know, that creates problem. I worked with it. I sat in this office, so therefore the desk is mine, the chair is mine, the computer is mine, the car is mine. And that, you know, even though I'm going to do a service, I don't need it. But I've developed a lifestyle. I need it myself personally. You know, so they have nothing to do with each other. And then, well, I did so much service, I deserve this. But no, you did service for Krishna. If you were doing that to get a computer, car, desk, and a place, you should have told us in the beginning. You should have said, yes, I'll be the temple president, but the reason I'm doing this is because I want a car, a desk, a table, a computer, you know, a flat, and, you know, so much a month. And then if it is, then we'll consider whether we want you or not. And if, okay, we need an administrator, we'll hire you as an administrator, you know, and we'll give you those things. But the spiritual head of this temple is going to be someone who doesn't have that attitude. And you got to listen to him. You know, like that. So they'll say, you know, ISKCON didn't say, you know, these things, but neither did they say. Right? When they came, they said, I'm here to do volunteer service. They didn't say, I want a pension. Right? At the same time as you know, so you can't say that, you know, they never told me that, you know, if when I get older and then if I decide to kind of go on my own, I'm going to have to make it myself. But you never told that that's what you're going to want. It goes both ways. You know, you know, it's known as volunteer. You go and work for a volunteer organization. You can't say after, you know, where's my pension? They say, hey, this is voluntary. You know, it's an open secret. You know? Nishkam Karma Yoga and pure unalloyed devotional service is our goal. Therefore, everything in between is going to be in that flavor.
So everything's actually influenced, even the voluntary acceptance of devotional service. Yeah, it's internally inherent anyway.
Yeah, it's internally inherent, and if you've done one devotional activity, you'll be inclined towards another. Just like if you do one pious activity, you're inclined towards doing another one. You do a sinful activity, you're inclined to do that again. You do a devotional activity, you're inclined to do that one again. That's called a jata sukriti. Is that you've done devotional service, you're inclined to do it again. And when that increases enough, the volume of that, where you actually get faith in devotional service and take up the association of devotees, then that's called bhajana kriya. That's where the devotion actually, the process becomes real or becomes serious. That's why it says that at initiation it becomes serious, right? Because before that, that was all a jata sukriti. Like that, because you're just by that, so you're doing it and you're getting a taste, you want to do more and more and more. So when that increases to the point where you have the faith to surrender in the association of devotees, surrender to the direction of devotees and take up seriously the process, then that's where the devotional process seriously begins. Though it starts from faith, and faith starts from the previous agyata sukriti than that we got from the association of devotees. and then that becomes actually devotional service at prema. And it becomes, from bhajana kriya becomes serious, then at nishtha, then that becomes, now this is the beginning of advanced devotional service. You know, that was serious, now it's advanced. Then when you hit the Brahma-Bhuta platform, like that, then that's, now that's getting, now that has, that's real, because then you start dealing with the spiritual form. Then that becomes real when you actually take up this association of the Nityasiddha devotees. Right? And that becomes real when you develop your Purva Rag, your complete attachment for Krishna. And that then becomes more real when you get the association of Krishna and his intimate associates in the pastimes, that you are part of their pastimes. And then that becomes real when you develop prema. You know? And then from there, it's just, you know, it just keeps going. Yeah, so it's just, each has its, you know, same as that, he actually becomes, you know, properly benefited when the first one does this first Agyata Sukriti. So it's all, it all has influence. You know. But still, even despite all the situations been created, the influence is there, you know, from outside and from inside, you still have your free will. That's still still have your fear.
So how do we become, what makes us, or what can help us become very decisive when using it? For?
Decisive.
I'm introducing this class just to ease. So, was it so decisive?
Yeah. We have, that desire should be there. So then, you know, then we gain what it takes to develop that, the association, that particular knowledge, the particular activities, you know. So devotional activities will create that kind of interest in that more. The association of the devotees creates us wanting to do that knowledge and creates the inspiration to take advantage of it. Like this, so all those things, you know, therefore hearing and chanting and the association of devotees is the most important, you know, because we gain the knowledge about ourselves, about the material world, about ourselves, changes our identity, about the material energy, then we give up that attachment and know properly how to engage it. By hearing about Krishna, then we develop our attraction for Krishna. You know, so all those kind of things are doing, and that's in the association of devotees. So we see, either directly or indirectly, we hear about the devotees, so we know how they act in the perfectional platform, what process was used to get to that perfectional platform, how they identify themselves, like that, how they deal with the material energy, like that. So then it makes things clear.
It just builds up everything.
It just builds. It means the more it builds up, the easier it is to make that decision. And so the more one moves in that direction, the easier it becomes. You know, it's just like a habit. The first time you do it, it's very difficult, and the results you get very minimal. As you keep doing it, then, you know, step by step, then it becomes easier to do, and the results you're getting are greater. So then your inspiration is more, you know, like that. You know, it's like the kid starts to ride the bicycle, so they get on the bicycle, they fall off the bicycle. So it takes a little more determination then. But once they can ride the bicycle, then they're actually quite happy. You know, things go quite nicely. You know, then the more they ride, then the more they inspire them. You know.